Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Misha Tate, and you're listening to Carson's Corner.
This is Stitch Duran, and you're listening to Carson's Corner. Make sure you stay tuned in.
This is Justin Ray Harvey, Frank Duke's student. You're listening to the best of the best shows on the web and beyond. Carson's Corner with Bob Carson.
This is Bo, the one-man army Taylor, media darling and Midwest champion of the world. You're listening to the only radio show that's hard-hitting, keeps it real, and does not pull punches. Carson's Corner.
This is the coach, Sean Tompkins, and you're listening to the best in mixed martial arts, Carson's Corner.
Okay, let's go. Yeah, g'day, this is Justin Lawrence calling from my backyard in Australia, mate. You're listening to Bob Carson, the finest investigative journalist in mixed martial arts history. Listen to his show, I love it.
Hey, this is Joey Odessa, and you're listening to me on the Bob Carson Show, the show that lets no words barred give a whole new perspective to no holds barred.
These days, it's not much fun at Bally's and Caesars in Atlantic City. The CEO is playing the corporate greed game, cutting dealers' hours, cutting retirement and health benefits, even breaking the law by refusing to bargain. Yet he paid himself $39 million last year, with plenty of perks.
Place your bet.
When Bally's and Caesars play games with casino dealers, it's not fun for anybody. And everybody loses. That's why the UAW Atlantic City Dealers Union paid for this time.
Around the world once again. Welcome to Carson's Corner. My name is Bob Carson, and it is a late night edition of the show, 12 a.m. Eastern Time. Very proud to be with you here on Blog Talk Radio. And just a note there, that promo in the beginning of the show, the Dealers Union ad, that's like from 10 years ago or something. That was an Eddie Goldman ad, and he sent it to me, and I've been playing it for a while now, so I don't know. I don't really care. I doubt there's even a dealer's union anymore. I mean, it seems like Atlantic City, the casinos there are going under left and right. So I don't know what that's from. I don't even know if that's still in existence. But in any event, we have a great show for you, as always. We're going to talk about Bellator. You know, it's been a real busy week with Bellator. And us, really, we called in on the March 23rd Bellator conference call, which is was about the King Mo versus Rampage event coming up in Illinois on Friday, which is the 31st. Okay, and that's been surprisingly, Bellator has been getting a lot of headlines. I got to give them credit. Bellator has been matching the UFC media machine, and at least for this week or so, I would say that Bellator has been outdoing the UFC media machine. You don't see a lot of news. Dana White has been very quiet on social media. People are really tired of this Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather stuff. I'm tired of it. I think there's going to be a backlash to it. Eventually, I mean, if the fight ever does come around, I think people are just going to be just too tired. I don't think they're going to get the anticipated, you know, pay-per-view buys. And I think that's a good thing because they're losing control over there, this whole boxing and fighters calling up boxers and whatnot. And there's a reason for that. Maybe I'll talk a little bit about that later. But I have to hand it to Bellator. They had another press conference today, and, you know, they are doing very, very well. With the amount of attention, with the amount of promotion that they're doing, putting cards, signing fighters. It's been like a really, really good start to 2017, and you can even look a few months before this and go into last year and see some of the acquisitions that they got. So I attended the Bellator press conference. Now, I wasn't expecting to go to this because I'm on Bellator's media list. As I've said always, Bellator has been very, very good with me, with Eddie Goldman, and with pretty much every member of the media that I, you know, associate with, which is not many. But I think for the most part, you know, Bellator has been very, very good. Bellator, Scott Coker, you know, even with Strikeforce, when I covered him under Strikeforce, Scott Coker was very, very good with dealing with the media, and Strikeforce was. And no surprise, Bellator and Spike and Viacom, they've really, really done a good job and been very, very accessible to all media, to you know, anybody out there that wants to cover it. Whereas just the UFC, forget about it. You know, press credentials, it's like, you know, it's not worth the hassle. They're very selective as far as who they give them to. They're very selective with fighter access. They're just very selective in so many different areas. And so I haven't even tried. No, Eddie hasn't covered the UFC in probably, you know, since 2001, since, you know, UFC Japan, or since the UFC in Atlantic City, you know, when Randleman lost to Couture, what's his name, got knocked out. Randleman got knocked out by, I mean, you could just, you know, go back to those events. And I was there at the time following, and I was actually competing in MMA back then. And so, you know, it's just people don't bother. People are I think there's a genuine backlash against the UFC. But in any event, I didn't plan on going to this, but I got the email. Eddie called me last Thursday and said, you know, did you get the email? I said, yeah, I got the email. I'll go. Absolutely. I've got nothing going on. My job, of course, under this rotten system has been eliminated, which in a way has freed me up to, you know, go to more MMA events, cover MMA more than I probably normally would, and work on my studies more. And so it's been, you know, I'm eternal optimism or optimist person, whatever, you know, I that's just the way I am. I'm always a glass half empty or half full, depending upon which situation I'm looking at. But when it comes to my endeavors, when it comes to my podcast, when it comes to my political activities and all that stuff, when it comes to all things Bob Carson, I'm an optimist. And so I'm like, yeah, well, I'll go. I had to have a colleague of mine come, my good buddy, my good friend, a guy who's helped me out over the years, who's covered a lot of events with me, who wishes to remain private because he actually worked for the public sector in a, you know, fairly visible position. And so we went there. So unlike last time when I went to the Joshua Klitschko press conference, I didn't drive in. And that was like the stupidest thing I could do, because I go to the city all the time. I love going to the city. You know, I'll go to the city for political events. I'll go to the city for the Left Forum. I'll go to the city for whatever the hell I'm doing, which is none of your business. I'll do whatever I want there, you know. And I drive in usually because I like having that control. And sometimes I'm there whatever hours. And I don't mind driving in the city. I have a small car. I used to work for a funeral home, and I would have to drive a big van in there to pick up dead bodies right in Manhattan. So I know how to drive. I'm a decent driver. I drove for Lyft. I drove for Uber. Okay. You know, I some people are aggravated by the city driving. I'm not. I'm fine. I could drive wherever. I'm probably a slow person. I probably piss off every taxi cab driver out there, but I'm comfortable driving. I've probably driven hundreds, if not thousands, of miles in New York City. And so I took the Joshua Klitschko press conference. I took my car in there, And I ended up spending like $50 in parking. It was a real disaster. I was low on oil. I couldn't get oil in the city. So, you know, I almost, you know, fried up my engine. I said, you know what? Me and my buddy are going to take the train. So I go to his house. We take the train up there. It's literally an hour train ride. It was pouring rain that day. So I got soaked. But we got the tickets. We got there like 10 minutes before the train got there. We got on there. It wasn't crowded because it wasn't the morning rush hour. And we made it to the press conference well before 12 o'clock. Now, I go in to get checked in, and I have nothing against Madison Square Garden security. When I went to the Klitschko Joshua press conference, there's the Madison Square Garden security, and then there's the event people there. That once you're cleared by security, you go check into the table, and it's very easy, very seamless. You're on a list, and boom, it's not you're not going to be in that line more than a minute or so. And my only problem there that I had at the Bellator press conference is that I had pepper spray on me, and they would not allow me in the area with pepper spray, and I couldn't leave it there, and they wouldn't even let me throw it out. They're like, we have to throw this out. I'm like, oh, all right, whatever, man. Do what you got to do. I have to get in there. So we get in there, me and my buddy. Eddie's not there yet, which I'm really surprised, because Eddie Goldman is like clockwork, like Eddie, if there's an event there, Eddie is very, very meticulous in planning things and getting there. And just like, he's just so like, it's like clockwork with him. Like I said, I've been covering events with Eddie for years. I know exactly, he knows everything. If something changes, he knows. Although he didn't know Vandalay was going to call in. Vandalay was going to be on Skype. But Eddie's on top of that stuff. So I didn't see Eddie there. I see Ariel Helwani, this guy schmoozing with some executive there. That's a whole, I'll talk about that. Unbelievable. Not surprising. And so we waited the press conference. We got in there. I like to sit in the back row. I don't like to sit in the front. In the back row at Madison Square Garden, that's where they have the cameras there for Spike TV and anybody else covering the event there. So I don't typically ask questions during the press conference. I prefer, one-on-one access with the fighters and everything. And all the fighters come out. You have Michael Chandler, Douglas Lima, Fedor, Chael, Coker, and the guy, Slussing, whatever his name is, from Spike TV. And who did you have? You had Larkin, Mitrione, Larkin, and Primus at the end there. I believe that's it. And they had a couple speakers from Madison Square Garden, which they probably had to do. It was probably a part of some sort of a contractual agreement that they have to have these people speak about Madison Square Garden. They were talking about indirectly the UFC and how this has become the mecca now of mixed martial arts, which who knows if that's the case. But he did mention the UFC, which is probably crafted, and so they started the press conference, and then you have Vanderlei there on a panel to the left of the stage from where I was sitting there, and it was just horrible. It was just with him, the volume was off. You can hear him breathing. The microphone, they were having problems with the microphone. And the ring announcer, I forget who the ring announcer is from Bellator, I think Williams, or I don't know his name. The name escapes me right now. But very, very good announcer. He's the voice of Bellator. He's got a great voice and seems like a real classy guy. His microphone didn't even work, so he has to go to the center podium where Scott Coker was. And by the way, Coker is not the best public speaker to begin with. Coker, he's not, at least you could say for Dana White, he's loud and obnoxious and you can understand him. But Coker sometimes is a little difficult to understand. He's kind of quiet. He talks very fast. And, you know, he says, I don't think Coker, if I had to guess, I don't think Coker likes public speaking. And so he introduced the fighters, and the fighters got out there, and it just from that perspective, it was just kind of disappointing, because there weren't many questions from the press, the media there. The few that were asked were just, you know, there was one lady that was half dressed in the front row from, I don't know where she was from, just asking these really weird questions. And, you know, there was just a back and forth that you expected from Chael and Vanderlei, and that got to be ridiculous. I mean, you know what Chael's going to do, and I like Chael, and overall I think Bellator likes it, because I think they see some benefit to that. I mean, let's not forget, Bellator 170 got over 2 million views. You know, and you have to believe that some of that is because of, you know, the pro wrestling shtick and the press conference and Tito and Chael and all that stuff. So I'm not saying that they're somewhere down the line, it's not a benefit to it. It's not built into the model of Bellator. It's certainly what Chael does. It just got annoying at this press conference. I didn't really, I don't find that humor funny. And so, you know, it's just, we were like, okay, you know, Eddie was pissed. Like, this is a disaster. This is the worst one. I was like, yeah, this is pretty bad so far. You know, it's like, there's just not a lot of stuff here. It's not lively. You know, you learned a little bit about some of the fighters and whatnot. So they said, okay, the fighters are going to gather for a photo op. They're going to do some stare downs, and that's going to be it. Well, we found out from Matthew Kaplowitz, who Eddie knows, and I'm friends with on Facebook, Matthew does some sort of filming. I don't know if he works for Spike TV or what his deal is, that the fighters are going to be available for interviews. Now, I've been to enough events to realize that, you know, I believe it when I see it. Like, you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know if they're, you know, if they're going to line the fighters up or what the hell they're going to do. So they had some lady at Spike get up to the stage, and then they put these fighters up on the stage, and everybody lined up that wanted to talk to these fighters. And I got to the front of the list, and I was like, okay, great. We're going to have direct access. There was Brent Primus, there was Lorenz Larkin up on stage, and I'm like, yeah, let me talk to them. Let me line up. And so that's really when all the information for me, when the press conference began, was right then at that point, because that's where I could do what I do. And that's where, you know, we could start to get these fighters one on one, and we could start to, you know, get some information and do what we do best here on Carson's Corner. And it ended up becoming a very, very successful day once that happened. Now, there was Fedor was there, and to be honest with you, Fedor doesn't look like he enjoys these things, and I can understand that. You know, he's got a language barrier there. You know, Fedor, he just doesn't look like the type. It looks like a quiet and kind of private person, and doesn't normally like to be around, you know, be at these events. You know, he probably likes to hang around with a few select people, and I don't have a problem with that at all. So I didn't have any really desire to speak to him, but the interpreter that he had and the interpreter that they used was just, she was bad. She couldn't hear what she was saying. It was just, there was no need to even speak to him. And Eddie got, you know, 3 or 4 minutes with Fedor, and that was it. But, you know, once we got going and once we were able to really speak to these fighters, we got a lot of good interviews, and we really, really, really did very well. We're going to play all the clips on the show here. They're not too long. The longest interview I got was about 6 minutes with Matt Mitrione, who recognized us and was appreciative of us. And we had interviewed Matt back in 2013. He's a very, very likable guy, very, very nice guy. Outspoken, definitely outspoken, but that's, you know, to be fine, as long as I don't have a problem with somebody being outspoken. I'm a big guy on how they treat the media and how they treat the fans. You know, if they alienate the fans or they alienate the media, I don't want to deal with it. So, yeah, he was dressed. If you didn't see it, he was dressed, you know, the part. He looked nice. And we got an opportunity to speak to him. And we spoke to Chael as he was being ushered off the stage by Spike TV for a brief minute. I wanted to ask him about Submission Underground 4. So it was a really, really good day. But, you know, it was just kind of funny because you saw – at one point, it was funny because Eddie Goldman was you see these executives and these muckety-mucks. And, you know, I am the type of guy, and I've said this before and I'll say this again, Eddie's like this too, that I don't suck up to people. I'm a very nice guy. You know, if you talk to people that know me or have met me or work with me, and I'm just not a mean guy. I'm just not a jerk, and I hate jerks, and I hate people that have star attitudes and have, you know, I know relatives that are like that I don't talk to because they're just like, oh, I'm better than this person. I don't have that attitude about me. But when it comes to, like, you know, the corporate world, and it comes to, like, businesses and these guys, it's like, I don't like participating in unsanctioned behavior, and it just pisses me off. It really does. And Eddie Goldman at one point was like, look at these guys, like Jared Kushner, you know, comparing these Spike TV executives to Jared Kushner, Donald Trump's son-in-law. And you know what Eddie's talking about, you know, these real business type guys, these muckety mucks with the suits, and, you know, every hair is in place, and, you know, just not a soul in their friggin' body, you know, it's just, they don't stand for anything, these guys, just, and these are the CEOs, and these are the business leaders, and these are the decision makers, you know, in our society, and it's just like. And of course, as I mentioned earlier, you got Ariel Helwani there, and I'm not joking, man. I am not joking when I say, like, literally schmoozing everybody. You know, like, just, you could just see, like, you could see him just trying to get, like, you know, deals, and just trying to, you know, get whatever he can, just siphon, you know, whatever they can. And some of these people came up to him. But you know what? It's like, it's just nauseating. And I actually heard him at one point. You know, I don't know if he was talking about, you know, before when Bellator. In previous years, or was talking about, like, coming up. But, like, he's like, well, you know, you gotta make it worth my while to come out here. You gotta do this. You gotta do that. And you know, it's funny is that. The difference between someone like that and these people that, you know, that the so-called hardcore fans really, really gravitate to, you know, they're just mindless, the sheep out there that, you know, you get some guy that can regurgitate, it looks a certain way, and it's not, you know, just kind of in the grain and in the mold and whatnot, and you know, can maybe rattle off a fact or two here, and is reasonably well spoken. You know, you get people that'll follow him like a cult and all this stuff. But nobody, I don't want a goddamn thing for covering this sport. I could care less. You know, I appreciate the opportunity. I'm not looking you know, I do admit that there is a desire on my part to, you know, get my name out there and to, you know, to establish myself in whatever capacity. I don't care, you know, like to really establish myself as, you know, whatever. Like I said on last week's show, you know, we're not going to get 10 million Facebook viewers or, you know, we're not going to have a YouTube video where we're going to get 17 million viewers because we're not like what we're not in the mold. You know, we haven't made the filtering system. We're different. We're, you know, X, Y, and Z. I could spend hours talking about this, but we're not looking for anything. I don't do this, you know, to try to make a dollar off of it. You know, my principles, my pride is everything to me. And I was talking to somebody today. I was talking to a kid. He was a drug addict, and I knew him, and I've known him for years. And he has bipolar, and this kid is going through a hard time. I say kid, he's a couple years younger than me. And we were talking for a couple hours today. He was telling me some real far out stuff, and he said something to the effect that, you know, your personal pride or your personal integrity or your energy or you know, something to that effect is worth more than this fictitional concept of money, and it's worth so much more than anything can any item out there. And you know, that's what's like, it's just really, really remarkable to see that, to see people engage in that type of behavior. But, you know, at the end of the day, I love the sport of mixed martial arts, and I don't discourage anybody from watching or listening to any podcast. And I think all of us, you know, are concerned about the welfare of the sport and want to see what's best for the sport and, you know, best for the fighters out there. I don't think there's any question about that. So, you know, it's not that I would encourage you, or it's not that if I did listen to somebody and if I did, you know, use or think that their article was worth something, I would mention it and I would give an attribution to them. And I don't, you know, have I'm about as honest of a person as you could be. That's just my opinion. You may differ, but whatever. It doesn't make a difference. All right, so let's play this interview. We're going to play Brent Primus here first. And I don't know what it is. You got to look at the YouTube video. And it was funny because when we got on the stage, and he's like very, very nice guy. But when he looked at me at first, like, he was like a real intense look. And sometimes you got to wonder, you know, I don't know if it's that maybe I piss somebody off or maybe I text one of these guys once too often for an interview. And they're like, oh, Bob Carson, this guy. They, you know, they know the name somewhere. They're. I mean, I'm not saying everybody. Look, I mean, I don't have the built-in website, the built-in audience. I don't have, you know, like I said, these podcasts, some of these other podcasts. Like, there's Brendan Schaub now. He's, oh, the Big Brown. What the hell is the Big Brown? I'm sorry. They're not. It's not genuine to me. You know, I mean, half of these guys, 95% of these guys haven't been around nearly as long as someone like myself and even before me, Eddie, going back to 1999. So it's just, you know, it's all pushed by, it's as I said last week and as I say in my political show, It's all about the people that you know in life. It's all about that person that you know, or that get, that puts their weight behind you. That's it. That is everything. You know, you can be the best, with the exception of athletics, you can be the best this or the best, you know, business mind or the best, you know, that or this thing. And if that position, that person in power doesn't give you the opportunity, then you're going to remain where you are most likely. I mean, that's just the bottom line. There's just too many people on this earth, too many people competing, you know, like we're like mice running around in the freaking cage. You know, we're just spinning around in our wheels. And, you know, I mean, and that's what it's all about. I mean, that's why these guys, you know, anybody that, you know, Rogan or you know, Dana White, would Dana White be the president of the UFC if it wasn't for the Fertitta brothers? Are you freaking kidding me? Get out of here. Would that guy be, you know, worth $400-500 million? That's not to say he's not. I'm not, you know, but you get the point. It's not an all a zero sum game here. You know, would Lorenzo Fertitta, you know, I mean, would fill in the blank. I mean, that's how it is. That's the reality. You know, and you know, the cream doesn't rise to the crop. That's a platitude, and it really doesn't mean anything. And so, it's just hard for me to take these guys seriously. But I had a larger point there that I just totally forgot about. So in any event, I'm going to play this. Oh yeah, I was talking about you know, fighters and. You know, I Lorenz Larkin, I know I've contacted before, and Chael, I don't think Chael recognizes me, and I don't think I've asked Chael questions on press conferences. If I asked him, if he may have recognized the name. I know he knows who Dan Quinn is, and I know he had a brief interaction with the Steve Stevia. The Dan Quinn troll years ago, but I don't know. When I went up to Chael, he didn't seem like Chael does a lot of media, so he didn't seem like he would like he recognized it. But he could. So that's always sometimes in the back of my head when I'm interviewing these guys, you know, is you never know. Like you never know. I'm an outspoken person. I will be always. And you know, I don't podcast to make friends. That's another thing too. You know, that's what's so great about this show and other shows like this is that I really hate to say it, but you know, people's feelings are just secondary. I can care less about you know feelings. I mean, it's not that I'm trying to offend fighters or offend people, but I really, you know, because it's frustrating. It takes away from the content of the show. Like you see people that just walk on eggshells not to say something offensive or declaratory or declarative about a fighter and you know, because it's all this, oh, you know, you got to interact with this person or, you know, you got to see this person. Now, I call it like I see it, ladies and gentlemen. That's what I do here. You know, you got to let the chips, you know, lie where they fall. You got to reap what you sow. You live by the sword, you die by the sword, and that's what we do here on Carson's Corner. So, you know, if I don't think that would happen. I mean, I don't think a fighter, unless you're Rampage Jackson, would berate members of the media. But You never know. You that's my point is that if you put yourself out there, you got to be prepared for everything. You really do. All right. So here is Brent Primus here on Carson's Corner, and we're going to play that, and we'll come back. It's about 3.5 minutes or so, and let me know what you think.
ask you, you know, you've mentioned during the press conference you're relatively new.
People are still kind of unfamiliar with your background. Give people at home a feel for your background. You obviously have a wrestling pedigree, I'm sure. So kind of tell people in a few words.
Yeah, you know, like, I kind of actually got into MMA. I, you know, I had, like, I didn't have a dad growing up, and I had, like, kind of trouble in life, and I had a lot of, you know, anger deep down, and when I was in high school, I used to get a lot of fights, a lot of house fights, like, parties. I was getting fights every weekend, and my, one of my buddies, Ben Baxter, who's now is my instructor, is like, man, if you're going to be out there fighting, you should get in the cage and make some money and do something with yourself. And so that's where it kind of all started. I used to get a lot of street fights, and then I walked in the gym, I remember, thinking that I'm going to beat the crap out of all these guys in the gym, and it was not that way. I remember getting choked out and got beat up pretty bad by all these little guys, and then I fell in love with it and started training and, you know, fell in love with it, and that's where it all came from.
When did you start wrestling?
I actually did not wrestle.
Really?
This is all from jiu-jitsu right here.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, I really wish I would have wrestled, but I played soccer my whole life. I played in classic teams and all around, you know, and all year round. So soccer was my life. And then, yeah, I kind of just, I don't know how I got in MMA, but I remember at first time I saw it, I was like, this is crazy. You know, I'd never do that, but I started doing jiu-jitsu, and it all came from there, and yeah.
You know, it's almost like you're in a no-lose situation here. I mean, coming in here, right off the bat, title fight. Do you expect to rise to the occasion there? I mean, do you expect to basically go in there and say, you know what, I'm probably not going to be the favorite going into this fight, but nonetheless, I'm going to let it all hang out there. Okay, you're looking a little bigger than Chandler, definitely probably walking around with a little bigger weight. So how does that feel? Is there less pressure in that sense?
I feel like there's less pressure. You know, like, ever since I started competing at combat sports, I've been, all my friends, all my family, everybody's, oh, you're going to win, you're the best, you're going to knock this guy out, this guy doesn't stand a chance, and honestly, I hate that, you know, so being the underdog, I thrive off of it, I love it, you know, it makes me run harder, it makes me do extra rounds, I love it, and so being the underdog, bring it, you know, this is what I love.
I have to ask you the last final question. On the underground forum, a lot of people talk about your last name.
Yeah, for sure.
What do you think about that? Do you get that a lot? Does it get annoying? Are you a fan of Primus at least? Or?
I get it all the time, you know, and I'm just kind of used to it now. But yeah, I don't really listen to them too much, but you know, they got some good songs, and you know, they say it's Primus, but you pronounce my name Primus.
Right.
So it's a little different, but man, I get it everywhere I go, and so. It's cool, I guess. It's cool.
Oh, good luck on the 24th.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we're back here on Carson's Corner. And to be honest with you, I wasn't really familiar with Brent Primus. I mean, I was not Primus. I wasn't familiar with him. I mean, he didn't just come into Bellator. He's been fighting in Bellator since 2013. His really only notable win, has been against Derek Anderson, and you know, Derek Anderson has fought and beaten Patrycki Freire. He's you know, fought some. He actually beat Patrycki twice, and that Muslim fighter that lost to Brennan Ward at Bellator 163, he won against him. But really, that was it. And so he's been, you know, fighting. He's undefeated, so it's not like he just, you know, he's been in Bellator for a while now. And so he didn't just come into Bellator like Lorenz Larkin did and fight for a title. So I just, you know, that's one thing that kind of stuck out at me after I interviewed him, but we'll see. You know, he's got a real good jiu-jitsu background. I was really shocked to learn that he wasn't a wrestler. I mean, he's got that neck, and you know, obviously he just looks like a wrestler, very very well-conditioned person, and he looks a lot bigger than Michael Chandler. I mean, I saw Michael Chandler at this press conference. Michael Chandler looked really, really small. I mean, he's just, you know, Chandler's an incredible athlete, and I really, really don't see him losing this fight really at all. You know, I think it's like, this has got to be, in terms of a title fight, this has got to be, you know, one of the greatest disparities in terms of odds going into a fight. But, I mean, just on sheer size. And, you know, Primus is about 5'10", but, you know, so he's fairly... fairly tall, I guess, for a lightweight out there. And so, you know, I mean, who knows? Stranger things have happened. But I guess you can't really judge by, you know, size, and you can't really judge by, you know, walking around weight in terms of the fight resolve itself. I mean, you know, since the interview and since the press conference, I've watched some of Primus's fights, and you know, he's got okay striking. I don't want to say that he doesn't have, he's got some decent kicks and got some decent strikes, but he doesn't have the explosive power that Michael Chandler has. He doesn't have the one punch knockout power, the grappling ability, although all of his submission victories have been by rear naked choke. I mean, Michael Chandler, you know, has everything. You know, he's got the wrestling, obviously. He's got the jiu-jitsu. He's just fought in so many and beaten so many of the biggest names out there. And he's just a legit. Great, one of the greatest champions out there, and so I don't see it, but it was something that was really noticeable, is just the size disparity between the two. We next got to speak to Lorenz Larkin, and this is good. This is I wanted to speak to him. I don't know if there's any. I think there's maybe one or two people that had spoken to him. I don't think a lot of people got a chance to speak to him. I wanted to talk to him about the UFC and the UFC basically treating him, you know, with a lack of respect. And I was kind of hoping that he would open up there a little bit. He kind of was a little bit tight-lipped about that. Didn't want to say too much. I brought up a story that was mentioned on Luke Thomas's show about how, you know, this guy attended a UFC event and he wasn't promoted, and it just it was looked bad, and you know, certainly there was an attraction, a working relationship that Lorenz had with Scott Coker going back to Strikeforce. And so, you know, he left, and you know, Lorenz had some good wins in the UFC, no question about it. You know, certainly could have been promoted. Certainly has a fighting style that they were looking for, but it didn't happen. And so, you know, he comes in, and right off the bat in Bellator, he gets a title shot. And it's something that I wanted to really talk to him about, and just kind of see if there's anything else there. I think that this has the potential to be the fight of the night on this card. You know, Douglas Lima and Lorenz Larkin, they have, you know, similar styles, and you know, you'd have to give the edge to Douglas Lima in terms of grappling. But everything else is pretty much equal. It's a pretty much pick'em fight, and you know, Lorenz has that great takedown defense, and it's really conceivable that he could finish his fight. It's not, you know, it's a championship fight, but it's like, okay, Lima's probably going to be a favorite going into it, slight favorite, but it's really anybody could win this fight. So you know, I wanted to talk to him about what he saw would be the outcome of the fight, that you know, this could be the fight of the night here, and this is a great first fight for him at Bellator. And we got some good audio from Lorenz. It's about 3.5 minutes long. So here is my interview with Lorenz Larkin from yesterday's press conference at Madison Square Garden.
Bob Carson of Carson's Corner Podcast with Lorenz Larkin. Lorenz, this is a huge, huge fight for you. You said during the press conference that you were surprised, you know, that they gave you this title shot. It must be good coming right into Bellator, getting this title shot versus Douglas Lima.
Yeah, you know, it's exciting. You know, I wasn't expecting it in the beginning. So, you know, just the whole experience has been like a whirlwind, you know, this past, 2 weeks? You know, so it's been crazy. I'm just pumped to be a part of a historic fight like this.
You come from the UFC, which you said respect was sort of an issue about staying there and whatnot. And you know, there were some anecdotes. You were just speaking to another host who was saying that you attended one of these UFC fan expos and You ended up having to buy your own ticket. You weren't promoted, even though you have a very, very, you know, exciting fighting style. Everything the UFC would want. And yet you come in this organization, you get a title shot right off the bat. Talk about just what it's like to work with Scott Coker, what it means to be, you know, the switch from Bellator in terms of respect.
Yeah. Well, I didn't buy my own ticket. I was provided a ticket,
okay.
You know, but I was there not doing anything. You know, I wasn't being promoted
right.
Much. But, you know, just this whole transition's been great, you know. I have a relationship with Scott, you know,
right.
And it's been nothing but good things, you know, in the past and in the present now, you know. And I'm just pumped to be a part of a brand that wants to promote me, you know, knows what I bring to the table and knows what type of asset that I can be to them, you know. So, you know, I'm just pumped about the whole experience.
Yeah, so you'll feel better appreciated, you know, working with Scott. I know, you know, you work with him in Strikeforce and whatnot. So, you know, it's just more, you know, they can appreciate your skills more so than, you know, the previous organization.
Yeah, for sure. You know, it's just one of those things where it just boils down to they know what they want. You know, as far as my last employer, you know, I don't know if it was business or whatever it was, you know, but all I can talk for is what I've experienced, you know, and I know what I bring to the table. I know every time I get in there, it's not a boring fight, you know, and I know that every time I fight, it's fireworks, you know, and so, you know, it just, the whole outcome was, you know, Scott knows that, and he knows that that's what he needs on this card.
Last question, what could fans expect from your fight versus Douglas on the 24th, and what do you anticipate the outcome to be?
Probably one of the best fights on the card, you know, and the best fights of that night, you know. Douglas is extremely exciting, you know, and my style is extremely exciting, and we both come in there, we both bring it, you know. So, you know, it's a little new fresh blood to the Bellator, and it's exciting, man. It's just, you know, both of our styles, all you have to do is look at his past fights and my past fights,
mm-hmm.
And you're going to know what you're going to get June 24th.
Absolutely. Good luck, my friend.
Thank you.
Well said. Okay, and he may not have purchased a ticket for the UFC convention, but the UFC now is reportedly requiring fighters, you know, to purchase tickets to bring their family over, to purchase footage to watch their opponents from Fight Pass. I mean, it's just come on, ladies and gentlemen. So yeah, it's good to see him. And you know, Lorenz Larkin has fought at a bunch of different weights. So this is a guy that, you know, even his fights that he lost in the UFC, Derek Brunson, I want to say he lost to Costas Filippo, the Long Island fighter who fought out of Cerro Longo. You know, he fought at 185, and then once he has come down to 170, I mean, there was a point in his career where he was a light heavyweight, for crying out loud. You know, he's beaten some good fighters, and his only loss since making his welterweight debut was against Tumanov, who's now with ACB. So You know, this is a top-of-the-line fighter and a good acquisition for Bellator, no question about it. And it's going to be really, really exciting to see him fight on June 24th, ladies and gentlemen. And so, yeah, it's that's probably one of the, third or fourth most sought-after card or fight on that card coming up, that pay-per-view card, which is pretty interesting in itself because, I didn't get the full context of the quote, but Lorenz stated in another interview that the pay-per-view model or the pay-per-view doesn't make sense. And I don't know. You know, this is pretty interesting what Bellator is doing about going on pay-per-view, the pay-per-view route, because what Scott Coker has done, if you remember when the earlier UFCs, I mean, you used to have UFC pay-per-views for $29, back during the Meyerowitz era. And, the amount of households with televisions, with cable televisions, I don't have the numbers, but Eddie would probably have the numbers and Peretti too. But the UFC buy rates back in those days were probably higher or on par with what we see now. The average UFC pay-per-view buy. Because UFC pay-per-views back in those days, hundreds of thousands of buys where there just wasn't as many households with cable because the pay-per-view prices were much lower. And so if Scott Coker says, okay, he left the door open to go down in pay-per-view, price, which is key. Because damn well that the UFC is not going to do it. I mean, the UFC and the company WMEIMG, they get over half of their revenue stream for pay-per-views, and that's not going to change anytime soon. I mean, they're going to continue to, try to charge as much as they can for these pay-per-views, they're going to put as many of these pay-per-views out there. Now, Coker, on the other hand, talked about how he's going to get three or four pay-per-views per year, which I think is affable, but it's also going to be relative to how many fighters he can get. He could do it. I mean, you can. There's a lot to play around with there. Viacom has a lot of money. They're investing in Bellator. With the whole Paramount change. Eddie Goldman was able to speak to Slussing, if that's his name, I think John Slussing, the guy from Spike, and talked about the programming time of Bellator is going to change, and Bellator boxing, it's not going to change. And they're doing well. I mean, like I said at the beginning of the show, television views, they've been a viable competitor to a viable TV competitor to the UFC. I mean, can we say now that the Ultimate Fighter, the fight nights are a guaranteed victory over Bellator? I mean, the UFC in recent times has shuffled their scheduling because of Bellator. So Bellator is definitely, they've definitely gotten some of the territory back that they've been losing for so many years to the UFC. And I think it's a can't lose situation for Bellator. Now, if you get a really, really low pay-per-view buy, let's say that this pay-per-view does, I would say, 60, 70,000 pay-per-view buys. That's still $2 or $3 million. Okay, it's not bad. The overhead costs, the marketing costs. You got to remember too that Viacom, as right now, is a global company. They have television networks everywhere. It's not going to cost them a hell of a lot of money to you know, to advertise. Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, advertising, you know, if you own a television station, you own a television network, you put advertising on there or you put programming on there, there's overhead costs, I get it, but, you know, they have them, they own the means of production seemingly here, okay? So, you know, they have the muscle behind them to do this. And, you know, we're going to see where they're going to go. We're going to see what they're going to do. But like I said, they're doing things right. And that the pay-per-view approach now is definitely something that I think is a win-win for them. I really do. So I don't think it's a mistake. You know, I don't think, and their talent level and their talent, their roster is only gonna get more, gonna increase. And the reason why is nobody wants to say this, but there has been a backlash against Dana White. People talk, you know, you'll not find this anywhere. Nobody will say this. People are still afraid of this guy, but people are just, they're tired of him. They're tired of his personality. They're tired of his aggression, of his domineering, of his you know, bashing fighters, of his just, you know, his control and his attitude, his self-righteousness. Okay? I'm not saying he hasn't done anything for the sport. You know, I'm not saying that you know, he hasn't done anything for fighters. He hasn't stood by fighters, certain fighters. I'm not saying that you know, that the UFC and Dana White, you know, they haven't brought fights and events and excitement to the fans, and they haven't built stars, and they haven't created opportunities for a small you know, section of fighters, you know, who are worth, you know, millions of dollars. Even someone like Rampage, who's complaining about. Rampage is a real head case. I'm sorry. I mean, Rampage, I hope he retires. I hope he goes back and lives with his family. I mean, Jesus, the guy is just, you know, he's another one, like I said earlier, if you alienate the fans, you alienate, you know, the media, you insult, you're unprofessional, whatever, you know, towards the media. I don't really have any sympathy for you. You know, at least when Chael went off on that Mark Raimondi guy, I think it was a couple months ago, he apologized. Like, you know, at least he understands. But, you know, Rampage is just, wow. That guy, he really has a lot of issues there. There's no question about that. And even a guy like that, I mean, he's made his money, I'm sure. You know, he's a great fighter. You can't take that away from him. But, you know, did he make his money in the UFC? Did he make his money in Pride? That's up for discussion. But, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, Dana White and the UFC and you know, we should just totally not be honest about any contributions that they've had and they've brought and anything they've done in terms of the overall sport. And you look at Fight Pass, that's another good example. You remember we had Ryan Stoddard on the program, and he's the CEO of Victory Fighting Championship, and how, you know, the UFC is helping out these other organizations. You know, the UFC with production, and giving, you know, Invicta and others an opportunity to have, you know, women fighting and all that stuff. And so, yeah, I, you know, believe me. But, you know, Dana White, sometimes you got to realize it's how you make people feel when you're around them. And that's a big point. And people don't want a tyrant. People don't like that. You know, and I'm telling you, that guy, his personality is like that. There's no question about it. No question about it, Donnie. What time is it? Wow, it's 1 o'clock here. It's 1 o'clock, and I'm just getting started. All right. Let's see what else we have here. Yeah, we have let me play the Matt Mitrione audio. This is great. This is probably our best interview of yesterday. Matt Mitrione, who was just dressed really, really flashy, talked about his upcoming we talked about the kidney stone situation, because I was really baffled by that. But, you know, there definitely was was a real problem, and really must have taken its toll on him physically, you know. And it was a shame, because so many people anticipated that. But, you know, I asked him about that, what a letdown that was for him. Spoke a little bit about his longevity in sport. You know, Matt is 38 years old. And the traditional notion is for men is once they get to 38, 39, that's it. They got to stop fighting. You know, they're done. It's a notion. It's not accurate. And I don't think Matt Mitrione is one of these guys that you look at him and say, okay, that guy can't move anymore. That guy's he's definitely a genetic freak, so to speak. Someone that can probably fight 10 more years if he wants to, just based on what we've seen now, you know. We spoke to him about that. It was really, really good. So here is that interview. Here is Matt Mitrione yesterday at the Bellator 180 conference call.
How are you doing,
Sam?
No, nice to meet you, man.
Yeah. You were on my show a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Thank you for doing this. Let me ask you about the kidney stones. It was kind of a mystery, you know, initially. People were kind of wondering, and you explained it. You explained in detail. You went online to find this doctor that you speak to.
Oh, on Twitter.
On Twitter, right. Yeah.
On Twitter. You know, in retrospect, looking back on it now, is it actually a blessing in disguise that happened? Because now you're part of the
Mavericks. Like,
right. I mean, I have these busiest guardian angels in the history of the world. Like things that fall through for me or a question mark or something that doesn't go right. Typically, if I didn't completely screw it up on my own accord, it works out in a much better way most of the time. And I have to make sure I give my guardian angel a tip when I get to heaven, if I get there. But other than that, it's incredibly serendipitous, fortuitous, whatever that is. It's incredible. Plus, like, my family's here, man. My maternal and paternal families are all from this area. Like, they just throw a rock and hit Giant Stadium. When I was with the Giants, I was staying out on their couch, for the first 3 or 4 months.
Yeah.
And it's, like, I could wake up at 7:50 and be there by 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
So my family's out here, so it's great.
So in essence, it was almost like worse to have the fight kind of end, be canceled on that way, than it would have, like, a loss or something like that, because you got so many different stakeholders, your family, you know, the fans, everybody.
So that's the thing. So we were really, like, we were trying to figure, Chris and I, Lytle, we're trying to figure out what we can do here. Like, okay, how can we make this thing work? Like, we're in a miserable spot. You don't have lung. Your body's going to shut down on you. You haven't peed in 30 hours. You have 7 liters of fluid in your body cavity.
Right.
You're in a bad spot.
Right.
You got 45 seconds of adrenaline to go give them hell. Right.
Right.
Like, it's like if you're going to make it, get in there, go hard 45 seconds, and whatever happens, happens. Right.
Right.
You knock them out, phenomenal. But you can't say anything about it because you didn't close something else. And if you lose, you can't say shit about it because you're making me stupid. Right.
Yeah.
And then after we thought about it, like, dude, the fans are better than this, man. Like, they deserve. They paid their money, and it's not that didn't
right.
happen.
Right.
But, like, they'll at least be able to watch it and see a real fight versus, like what happens if I tap on a body lock? What happens if Fedor gets a Greco lock on me and puts pressure on my kidney and I start tapping?
Yeah,
right? What the hell is that?
They
deserve more than that.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of where we were.
And you wanted the fight, but they wouldn't let you. Bellator.
They're like, you haven't even passed your stone. And the kidney, in CT, you haven't even passed your stone.
Right.
Like, you've got so much fluid in your body, no dice.
Right.
And that's what happened.
Now, listen.
And we were trying. We tried so hard. So hard.
I know. But, like you said, it's now it's in a more proper venue, on pay-per-view, a better card.
Oh, yeah.
And more people see this, definitely, with Fedor in New York City yourself. I wanted to ask you, like, you're an exciting fighter. You're quick. You're nimble for your size. But you're also, what, 38, 39 years old?
38,
yeah. Fedor, everybody's saying Fedor is you know, this is the last end of his career. He's shot, so to speak. You know, those are some people's words. You, on the other hand, you don't seem like it. How far in the future do you anticipate fighting?
Well, I don't know, man.
It's just not a number. I mean, yeah, your body tells you, you know.
I really believe that the bottom comes as credo, right? Like, I don't warm up. I just go, right? Like, and my body always has to be ready. And I really, I genuinely believe, and I think my track record, professional track record, can validate that I'm a genetic goon. Like, I'm there's not many made like me.
Yeah.
And so, I joke around, but I partially believe it. Like, I'm a Highlander. Like, I don't ever get sick. My body's incredibly healthy. It fixes itself if something goes wrong most of the time. And it never lets me down. This one here, I postponed something, but it didn't let me down. I can still do my job. I can still do everything I need to do. So it sucks at certain points, but like I said, I'm a Highlander, and I just gotta, maybe he's my other match, maybe only be just one, right?
Yeah, but people put that out there, like, oh, he's, you know, blah, 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 blah. It's all relative to the person. I mean, look at Randy. You know, Randy fought into his 40s and whatnot. I mean, you have other fighters that are physically durable and have the physical prowess that you do, where there's no real time limit as far as how long you can fight into the future.
Right. You know, I believe I can fight it as long as I want to fight. And that's another thing, too. Like, I'm not a traditional heavyweight, right? Like you said, I'm nimble, I'm athletic, I'm long, right?
Yeah.
And I have even still, the second highest punch defense rate or striking defense rate in UFC history, I think. Like I don't take many punches at all, and I'm nimble, and they miss just enough. Like Conor McGregor, right?
Yeah.
Conor is exceptional because he is an aggressive counter puncher. He moves just enough to evade to get you to elongate and stretch yourself, and then counter punches over top. I'm the same way. I'm an extremely aggressive counter puncher, but I have an offensive game if I need it.
And you have a heavyweight test touch of death, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'd love to be able to figure that out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing. It really is. Give us a prediction for the fight coming up. I know, you know, can you specify as far as round or anything like that?
I can tell you what's going to happen.
Yeah.
That I'm going to punch Fedor in his face. I'm going to put shins on his body, and I'm going to put hands on his face. I'm going to dig in that liver if it's exposed, and I'm going to be mobile. If I stand in front of Fedor, then I'm going to have a rough night. If I move around and make Fedor have to judge where my body is going to be and the targets he wants to touch are going to be, it's going to be a short night for him.
But you don't think you're quicker? You wouldn't give yourself the advantage in terms of speed?
I give myself an advantage in speed and quickness against anybody in the world.
Right, right.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. But if I stand in front of him, I'm not using my speed and quickness.
So you go...
I'm just a rock and sock'em robot.
Right. In and out then, sort of strategy?
That's how I fight.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah. Thanks a lot. Good luck on the 24th.
The world, the token, keeps the world, the singing, perfect harmony, and keeps the world, the singing. much has been soaked with the tears because a baby's life has been revoked. The bond is broke, got so choke up and focused on the close up, miss all wills I can't reform. No God like Hogan's focus, so don't sit back, kick back, and watch the world get worse. Whack you dead, and your neighborhood is under attack. Put away the crack before the crack put you away. You need to be there with.
All right, a little Smash Mouth here on Carson's Corner. We're back live here. My name is Bob Carson. We're going to have a caller on the line. We'll get to that in a second. But you just heard Matt Mitrione on the program here, and it's hard not to like him. You know, I'm just from a personal standpoint. And, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens versus Fedor, the last emperor. Matt's a guy that you have to really root. And I didn't get a chance to ask him about his contract. You know, he's fought, I think, two or three times for Bellator. And, you know, what is, how many more fights left does he have? What does he want to do next? Bellator could really, I think, improve on their heavyweight roster for sure. So, all right, let's go to 812 area code. I'm not sure where this is, but welcome to Carson's Corner.
Hey, how's it going? Big MMA fan here.
Good, good. How are you? What's your name and where are you calling from?
Good. This is Alec the Burger Bannister. I'm calling from Evansville, Indiana.
What do you want to talk about, man?
Yeah, I was going to talk about the good old WrestleMania back then, back in the day. Back when it was Adrian Adonis and Lou Albano and Andre the Giant and Bob Backlund and Blue Meanie and Berserker and Bam Bam Bigelow and Junkyard Dog and Conquistador and Spike Dougie and Dory Funk and Flash Funk and Terry Funk and Hoss Funk. It was all about the wrestling,
yeah, you know,
back then. When it was Hillbilly Jim and Kabuki and Jerry the King Lawyer and Mantar and
yeah.
New.
Yeah, and several of those guys that you mentioned are tough. You know, Lanny Poffo was one of these guys that could supposedly suck his own you-know-what. Did you know that?
Yeah, hell yeah. We met him one time in a bar down there in Philadelphia. He was a man of the people. He was in there buying drinks for everybody, and he was showing it all how he could do his own little trick.
Yeah, yeah, and then if you go on, if you Google him, you go on YouTube, he had this back. I mean, it's probably a work, but he supposedly had this big fight with this guy Nicholson, this big time wrestler. I forget his name, but this wrestler, Shawn Nicholson, I think his name is or whatever. He contracted hepatitis C, and he sued the. He got it. He said he got it from Abdullah the Butcher. And Lanny Poffo like got slapped, or Lanny Poffo snapped this guy Nicholson, and then Nicholson took him down and put him in a Kimura right in the locker room, and the honky tonk man had to break it up. It was really, really crazy. He said, was he the brother of Randy Savage or the late Randy Savage?
The Macho Man, yes, sir.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, this new kid's got my eye coming up, though. Bringing the Spooge Gobbler Knot. I don't know if you've heard of him.
Who's that? No.
He's 20 years old coming up. He's supposed to probably have the next big thing. His finishing moves, he gets up on the mat and then takes a shit on the guy's chest before he queefs in the other guy's face, too.
Are you some clown from the underground? Reveal yourself.
This is Alex the Burger Bannister.
Yeah, yeah. You also, no, you're not. I know who you are, actually. I actually have your name. You know that? Did you know that Bob Carson has superpower? I actually have your name. You are from Indiana. Your phone is registered to Indiana. But your last name is not Bannister. It's registered to a female, you troll. Huh? Silence. You want me to expose you, you little bitch? Audrey, I won't do that. You little punk. Probably one of these trolls on the underground. I got him. I got their name, and I'm going to look them up because Bob Carson is not somebody you want to mess with. I had this problem before. Did I ever tell you I had this Audrey? I'm not going to say it. But did I ever tell you years ago that I had this problem with this troll, okay? And this guy really, really, you know, he really went after me. I mean, for a long, long time. Whatever. You know, like I said, you put yourself out there. This is what happens. You get clowns like this, you know. You get whatever. And so he started just harassing me. Whatever. He probably put up a few fake sites. I found out this guy's information. I found out everything. I found out his employer. I found out their email. I found his back then it was MySpace, and he had all of these pictures of him, like, doing drugs and, like, all this stuff. And he was a big-time gambler. And I made all the screenshots, and I put them all together. And I sent them to his boss. And then he stopped bothering me after that. You know, he just stopped harassing yours truly. I don't fuck around. I don't care. People know who I am, and you could, you know, you could do whatever you want. It doesn't make a difference to me. But these trolls like that call in here, they hide behind screen names because they're not man enough to post their real identity. They're not outspoken. They're not a champion. They're not a warrior like Bob Carson. So just goes to show you. Now the same person called in via Skype. So you know what? That's it. But I tell you, I do appreciate, maybe this will be start becoming like a new thing on Carson's Corner. Maybe we'll start to do some late night shows. You know, Eddie, what Eddie does is Eddie has he has Pamela, which is a program that he uses, and he records interviews, and he plays them all the time on his podcast. And so maybe I'll start to do that. I don't know. That's one of the things that it's the difficult. We still have one more interview to play. I'll go real quickly to this this person who was ever calling on Skype. And real quickly, go ahead. You're live on Carson's Corner.
Hey, I just heard, what was that guy's deal talking about, you know what, on the chest, and what was that about?
He was a troll, and real quickly, get to your point, because we have to play an interview here, sir.
You what now? I'm sorry, cut out.
Oh, but where are you calling from, and what's your name, please?
Talking about some guy, his own.
Okay. All right, let's go to Chael Sonnen here, ladies and gentlemen. I had an opportunity to ask Chael Sonnen about Submission Underground 4, taking place, of course, in the Roseland Ballroom in Oregon, the very, very dim state of Oregon. Actually, no, yes. Portland, Oregon. Wait. Yeah, Oregon is the state. Portland's the capital. I'm sorry. You know, you hear these states, and sometimes you get states and cities mixed up. I'm not kidding. You really do. You know, like, I know every state and capital, but I have to list them out. That's one of the things I learned, every state and every capital. So, he's having Submission Underground 4. Dylan Danis, who's, he's the hot topic right now, signed with Bellator. He's going to be on the Bellator 24th card. You have Jake Shields fighting. But other than that, there's not too many. You usually have at Submission Underground, two or three fights, a main event, two or three, title fights, and that's it. And, people watch it. People have to, I believe people have to subscribe to Flow Combat for the event, which I'm not going to do. I mean, I'm not going to spend $20 a month, whatever it is, for Flow Combat. I don't know if you could buy the event separately just on that day. But I'm not gonna pay for it. At least not that much. It feels like $4 or $5 maybe, but I don't know. So I had an opportunity to ask that, and anybody can request to compete on Submission Underground 4. I want to see the females grapple. I remember it wasn't Submission Underground 3, but it was Submission Underground 2, where they had this girl, and I wanted to ask Chael about this. Does he desire, as a promoter, would he rather have attractive females grapple? Is it a promotional strategy, or just females in general? Because they had this female, and I'm not going to mention her name. She's not too well known. I think she's only like a blue belt or purple belt. She lived in a van, and that was her thing. She wanted to pursue her dream as, becoming a black belt or a jiu-jitsu champion. And she lived in this van. I think she's a Henzo Gracie student. And the problem was that she just wasn't marketable. She wasn't attractive, So I want to see, I realize it's difficult out there, to get attractive sometimes female grapplers, but I want to see if that's a strategy that he would consider, at least. So I got a chance to talk to him real briefly. The audio is a little rough on this because there was a lot of cameras there, and my camera guy was kind of obstructed by somebody else from another network. But here's Chael Sonnen.
Announced Submission Underground.
No, thank you for asking about that, but we got Dylan Danis versus Jake Shields in the main event. Dylan Danis is now signed with Bellator. Do you know about that?
Yeah.
He's going to be on this card. He's going to be fighting on June 24th.
Yeah.
He's likely to be on the spike portion as opposed to the pay-per-view. And now I see somebody from Bellator that just told me they just did this hand signal, which means maybe something didn't work out with Danis, but he will be taking on Jake Shields.
And it's true that anybody can compete at Submission Underground. If you go to the website, there's an application. That's where you guys filter out
on skill. You got to understand, so everybody would be given an opportunity, but in fairness to that statement, it is a show, so you've got X amount of time. So yes, when we get hundreds of applications and you've got to put 11 matches together, that's true, there is a filter process, but the formula by Mark and Martin out at Flow that run this thing out of Austin is they just want to find out who the best is. They're wrestling guys, who's the best, and the only way to find that out is open the pool to absolutely everybody, whittle it down to one guy's left stand. It's the NCAA rule or even the way the Olympic processes.
Right. Thank you very much.
All right. That was Chael Sonnen yesterday at the Bellator press conference. Now, Chael is actually going to he's going to commentate the King Mo versus Rampage fight this Friday. So I don't know if he was at the press conference today for Bellator, but he's going there. He's going to be there. And it was really interesting. And a big thanks to Flow Grappling, too, who actually they liked the tweet that I put out. I don't think they retweeted it, but, I'm definitely interested in Submission Underground. I think EBI, though, is better production. But, it's good to see grappling out there. It's good to see promotion. Chael's a good promoter. He's got probably a small venue. Low overhead, although I know it costs money to fly these fighters out there. I'm curious to see what these grapplers make. How much does was it Dan Henderson and John Jones, and Sig 2. How much are these guys making? I'm just curious, you know. I mean, there's reasons to do it. I understand there's personal reasons to do it, and you know, but I'm just curious. I'd be interested to see that. So we're going to take a brief time out here. You like how I slapped down those trolls that called from their mother's basement? Really embarrassing. I guarantee you they're from the underground. I guarantee it, folks. You don't mess with me. I know what I'm doing here. Okay? I've been doing this a long time. I have very, very thick skin, ladies and gentlemen. I really do. All right. We're going to take a brief time out here on Carson's Corner. When we come back, we're going to end the show. And then I'm going to go out and I'm going to get some Hostess cupcakes. Get some Hostess orange-filled cupcakes. I may have to drive far to get them, but I'm going to load up. Because for me, the night is just starting. The night is young. You got to remember, like, my days and nights are mixed up, man. You know, it's just crazy. When I went to the Bellator press conference, I didn't get any sleep, you know, whatsoever. So it's just not uncommon. Actually, you know what? We won't take a brief time. We're going to keep it right here for the time being. And we're going to close out the show pretty soon here, ladies and gentlemen. I want to tell you that you can friend me on Facebook. You'd go to facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA. facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA. You can also go to Twitter and follow me there at twitter.com/BobCarsonMMA. That's twitter.com/BobCarsonMMA. And also make sure right here to follow me on Blog Talk Radio. Each and every week we do a political show and we do an MMA show. We're trying to get guests on. I don't know who we're going to get on. We're supposed to get Dennis Bermudez. He agreed to be on the show. He would be a really, really good person to get, and others. So stay tuned for that. We do the best interviews here, I believe, here on Carson's Corner. Also, make sure to support Eddie Goldman's show at nhbnews.com or nhbnews.blogspot.com, nhbnews.podomatic.com. And there's only one no-holds-barred show out there. On Sirius XM on Sunday, there's some clown that is hosting what he calls the No Holds Barred show. And that was actually stolen from Eddie. It's really unfortunate, but you know, that's what happens. And but there's only one No Holds Barred show, and that's, of course, with Eddie Golden. We're also working on having John Peretti on the program and Incent Enyue. Actually, you know what? Yeah, that's who is supposed to be on the program next. Ensign's got a lot of stuff going on. He's doing a lot of relief, a lot of humanitarian work in his neck of the woods. So we'll talk to him about that. So, all right, that's it for this week's edition of Carson's Corner. Big thanks to everyone who tuned in. And until next time, ladies and gentlemen, show some respect.